This is the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca, episode number 33, Bad Food for Pets. Hey there, pet lovers, and welcome to the 33rd Pets Podcast on Pets.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we are coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For today's show, we're going to do a follow-up to podcast number 30, where we talked about healthy foods and healthy treats for cats and dogs. This time, we're going to talk about some foods that we should avoid, definitely foods we should avoid for cats and dogs. And we have Dr. Lee, who we are doing an interview with, and he's going to give us, as always, the benefit of his advice and talk about common problems that he sees in his own practice. For this interview, we're really only going to touch on a few foods that are particularly bad and cause problems. But as we mentioned during the interview, there's a list from the American SPCA, ASPCA.org, and I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes, but you could definitely check out that fuller and more complete list. And today's interview as well is also a bit out of sync. It was recorded over the Thanksgiving weekend, but took a couple of weeks to get it up, so we're not going to do a positive pet story because it's kind of out of sync. We're going to save it for the next time. So let's get right into the interview now. So I'd like to welcome back Dr. Lee to our podcast. It's been a few weeks since he's been on, and the last time Dr. Lee was on, we discussed good foods and good treats, and that was a pretty informative podcast. And this time we thought we would just go the opposite route and find out some foods to avoid and, you know, some consequences when you eat bad foods for pets. So hey there, Dr. Lee, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. So I thought we'd get into it right away. You know, a lot of times people give their pets food that they shouldn't, either by sheer ignorance or, you know, just by thinking it's not so bad. Can we go through a couple of bad foods that people think might be good, but that we really shouldn't be feeding our pets?
Sure. Some of the big ones that I think that people still don't know that are bad for dogs and cats are going to be onions and garlic, macadamia nuts, which is a big thing coming up in the holidays, and also grapes and raisins.
And those actually are, you know, they're kind of confusing because in some of the research, and I know even on in our pets.ca bulletin board, some of our members were saying that grapes are great for dogs, but the evidence, the recent evidence suggests that that's not true. What can happen when dogs eat too many grapes?
Grapes and raisins, that's probably, of all of these, I think it's kind of the most serious of the ones. There has been some controversy over it. I don't know why that is. It's pretty clear on the medical side that they are toxic to dogs. The difficulty is we don't know exactly what part of the grape or raisin is, like what the toxic compound is. We're fairly sure that it has to do with the flesh of the grape or raisin and not the seed. There are some people that holistically use grape seed extract that is possibly safe for dogs. But again, until I think we get more information, just kind of keeping anything away from the grapes or raisins with dogs is a good idea. We're not quite sure if it's associated with the cat, but there's, again, a lot of concern. Luckily, cats aren't big grape eaters anyway.
They're pretty finicky, I guess, overall. I had a quick question. So do we know how toxic grapes are? I'm assuming there's, as with many things, there's a lot of variation. Small dog, 10 grapes, maybe not as serious as a Rottweiler, 10 grapes. Do we know how toxic grapes are in general? Does it vary by type of grape, by amount ingested per size and weight of dog?
The lowest recorded amount to cause complete kidney failure was 0.7 ounces per kilogram for grapes and 0.11 ounces per kilogram for raisins.
That doesn't seem like a whole heck of a lot. What could that be, like 10 grams? I mean, trying to do my math here, but it doesn't sound like a lot of grapes to do that much damage.
Not necessarily. There is a bit of a range depending on, it doesn't seem that every cat or dog is as susceptible as others. But again, the difficulty is we don't know the compound causing the difficulty.
And in terms of grapes, the main consequence is going to be trauma to the kidneys?
Correct. Kidney damage. The difficulty with kidney damage as well is that unlike some of the other organs, it doesn't regenerate as well as, say, like your liver. So when it's damaged, a lot of times there's irreversible loss. With kidneys, we're given a lot more kidney than we actually need. And so in order to show up on the blood work that there's a problem with kidneys, you need somewhere between 50 and 65% of your kidneys being damaged in order to show it up on basic blood work. So there's a lot of concerns that giving small amounts of grapes and raisins, we're actually seeing damage to the kidneys that we may never really know about. We may lose, you know, percentage of the kidneys permanently, and it may be something that over time slowly accumulates. So I think there's a lot of concern that some of the older dogs that we see that come down with kidney failure was part of that, you know, responsible from grapes or raisins that they may have had throughout their life.
I think that's a really good point. I know many of our, like I said, we've had this topic before, and some people have suggested grapes are good. Now, for sure, it's obviously prudent not to feed our pets grapes. But during that period where people were uncertain, I guess they may have indeed thought that a few grapes are not so bad, and short term, they may not have seen the effects. But what you're suggesting is there may indeed be a long-term accumulation. So don't take any chances. As we discussed last week, you know, as we discussed with our last podcast with you, there are plenty of other good treats that are not going to cause kidney problems. So let's stay away from grapes.
Exactly. I think also with the clinical signs, there can be a little bit of a range. I think sometimes we can just see mild diarrhea, mild abdominal pain, some inappetence or loss of appetite. So sometimes they're not always the direct kidney signs that we think about. And since, you know, we eat grapes and raisins all the time, if a dog ate a couple grapes, raisins, next day had a little bit of diarrhea, no one may have associated the two events. One of the other difficulties.
Okay. So again, better safe than sorry. Don't feed your pets grapes.
Right.
It just doesn't pay. Let's go back to onions and garlic for a while. And again, that's another one where I found that some of our visitors are confused. Some visitors have suggested, you know, that garlic is good and that pets love food and treats coated with garlic. So again, I was curious to know, do you have any, even if it's anecdotal, do you have any stats or any opinion on, you know, how much garlic or how much onions are going to cause bad reactions?
There are some statistics on the onions. With the onions, I think we also need to kind of expand that into anything that is of the allium genus, which includes garlics, leeks, shallots, and chives. There's quite a number of these out there. It's not going to be just the onions. It's not that onions are causing one problem, garlics are another. Again, anything of the allium family, what happens is they have a compound called N-propyl disulfide. And what this does is it's thought to cause oxidative damage to the red blood cells. And then that leads to hemolysis or loss of the red blood cells. And so we can see, in some cases, a very serious anemia that can occur. The problem is that pieces of the onion powders, cooked onions, any of those will cause this damage. So whether the garlics or the leeks or the shallots are cooked, uncooked, whether it's one part of it, the plant, or another, all of them carry this N-propyl disulfide. So all parts, and it's not changed by cooking.
So again, don't take any chances. Let's stay away from, you know, onion and garlic and things with allium in it. I'm actually going to put a link or I'll mention some of these in the show notes as well. Again, so just in terms of consequence, is it in fact anemia that is the main consequence?
Yes, the toxin attaches and damages the red blood cell. The blood cell is then gotten rid of. There was one study where dogs were developed a serious hemolytic anemia after being fed about 30 grams per kilogram of onion once a day for 3 days. There's also been a number of reports of commercial baby foods that had onion powder in it, which was causing toxicity to cats. A lot of times with baby cats, like kittens and puppies, we're trying to nurse them to health. A lot of people will go and grab baby food. You have to be careful that there's not onion or garlic inside of this.
Good point, because onion and garlic is used in a lot of human foods to give it flavor for humans. And if the cat or dog seems to also appreciate that taste, we're not doing them a favor by giving them stuff that they simply shouldn't eat, obviously. Let's go on to macadamia nuts, which are really, really serious. Are cats likely to eat macadamia nuts, or is it most likely threatening to dogs?
I personally have only seen it in dogs.
Okay.
So I don't know if this is a cat thing. I don't know a whole lot of cats that like macadamia nuts.
Right.
The macadamia nut, it's a neurologic toxin. Can lead to weakness, depression, difficulty walking, tremors. Some dogs are unable to stand, get up. The lowest dose to have clinical effects is just over 2 grams per kilogram of macadamia nuts. Signs usually occur within the first 12 hours of eating.
What would be, I guess this was a question further down the road, but I'll ask it now anyhow. What would be the treatment for it? Obviously, we don't want people treating toxicity by themselves, so they would bring their pet to see a vet like yourself. What would you do for that pet?
If it had been recent, what we would do is, and with most toxins, we're going to be adding, if it's very recent, we can make them throw up, adding activated charcoal. What activated charcoal does is it helps keep the toxins inside of the intestines and not be able to be absorbed. There's actually some stories about Indians and Indian tribes when they would go into new areas that they'd never been, and they would actually eat dirt along with some of the new different fruits and berries that were in the indigenous area. And what they were doing was basically using nature's activated charcoal and try to test out the different foods without risking themselves to some of the toxic elements.
That's so smart and that's so interesting. And of course, we're now using these same techniques with our pets.
And it works well. Additionally, with macadamia nuts, what we would do is just supportive care. The prognosis with macadamia nut is actually usually very good. And most dogs will return to normal function within 1 to 2 days.
Okay, they return to normal function within 1 or 2 days. What if they don't seek veterinary care?
Depends on the level of the clinical signs. I mean, there are some dogs that can become very dehydrated, some that can have generalized muscle tremors, some that can have hyperthermia or elevated temperature. So we can get a lot of secondary other problems, and there are some dogs that may not make it if there's not the ability of providing that supportive care. Again, macadamia nuts, it's very serious. It is very important that we don't give our dogs macadamia nuts. When we kind of order the different toxins that we've talked about, macadamia nuts are some of the most striking of the symptoms, but usually the prognosis is very good. The next would be the onions. The anemia can be very serious, and your pets can die from onion and garlic exposure due to the severe anemia. Some dogs may even need a blood transfusion. If they make it through the crisis, or they make it or survive with the anemia, usually their prognosis is very, very good. The grapes and the raisins, because we're dealing with an organ that doesn't have the ability to regenerate as well as some of the others, that can probably be one of the most serious because we may have irreversible damage or a dog that has irreversible kidney failure from then on out.
Wow, very good to know. Very good to know. So again, if you think your pets got into the stuff, definitely seek vet care. Another common one that we hear that I don't want to talk about too much, but is chocolate. We know that certain types of chocolate are very bad for both cats and dogs. And I believe it's the closer it gets to pure chocolate, the worse it is. Baker's chocolate being the worst, then I think dark chocolate, milk chocolate, and white chocolate. So we hear this a lot. We have articles on our site about it. I was just wondering from a prevalence point of view, have you seen pets that have gotten into chocolate? Is this something that occurs frequently?
That's pretty common. We see it a lot around the holidays. Halloween's a big one. Halloween, Christmas, we just have a lot of extra chocolate hanging about. And you're right. The closer it is to baking chocolate, the worse it is. Milk chocolate is going to be, less lethal than there are things like Oreo cookies that we wonder if there's real chocolate in there to begin with. So, I mean, there's that range. Also that needs to be included in this is coffee. Coffee also has the same compounds. The two compounds that we look at with the chocolate toxicity is theobromine and caffeine. So caffeine is part of it. So cocoa bean, coffee, chocolate. They're all kind of synonyms for the same problem.
And just so people know the severity, have you had pets that have been seriously sick or maybe even lost a few because they have eaten too much chocolate?
Yes, there's definitely a lethal dose of chocolate. So, and it can cause some very serious problems with the heart.
Good to know. Again, we need, even though it's holiday season, sometimes we want to give our pets treats. You know, go back to our last podcast where we discussed good treats, because these ones are particularly bad. And, you know, err on the side of caution. If you're not sure, you know, just don't give it to your pet. Obviously, it just makes sense. But so many people just look into their pet's eyes and they give them, you know, those droopy, cute eyes, and they just want to make them happy. But think twice before giving them anything if you're not sure if it's going to be good or bad. Just because it, and we discussed this last podcast too, just because it's good for humans or it's a treat for humans, humans and dogs are different. So if you don't know, don't do it. And if you're looking for some good foods, go back to the podcast where we suggested some good foods and good treats for pets.
Absolutely. And one thing I'd just like to add on that is that there's a lot of fruits, vegetables that we still don't know about. It took us a long time to figure out about the grapes and the raisins. So some of the more unusual fruits and vegetables, I usually steer my clients away from them. The stuff that we know about, that we know is safe, carrots, those are things that have been around for a long time. But a lot of the newer fruits and vegetables, we don't always know. It may take us a while to figure those out.
Okay. And then I guess the king of all the questions, which I'll ask you, is again, just based on your experience, what types of food are the foods that you see most common that people are giving to pets that cause them to have bad reactions?
When the number one toxins that we see from foods that people give is going to be high fatty foods that are just overly rich for the pet. Common thing that we see is someone will have steak and that fatty little gristle that goes around the edge of the steak, they'll go ahead and give that to the dog. High fatty foods, when you're driving by a barbecue area and you all of a sudden you smell all that fat and your stomach starts to get growling, what happens is inside your body is preparing for a large amount of protein, fat, and your pancreas is responsible for releasing the enzymes that digest the fat. When dogs are normally exposed to kibble on a daily basis, and then they're given something that has high amounts of fat, something like heavy gravy, bacon, something they're not used to, their pancreas releases a large amount of digestive enzyme that it's not used to handling. And so that enzyme starts to leak out of the ducts and actually starts to digest the pancreas itself. That can be extremely painful and can be a very serious life-threatening situation. Actually, as we speak, I have a little dog who's being hospitalized over the Thanksgiving holiday for inflammation of the pancreas.
And in your opinion, are you seeing this type of reaction from people giving their pets lousy foods? You see that pretty frequently?
We see this very frequently. This is probably our number one toxic food-related problem.
You know, I keep going back to the last podcast as a comparison, but I mean, we talked about there how 80% of a dog's diet should come from a high-quality food. So there's no reason to be feeding our pets these fatty treats, these fatty foods, these foods that we just don't know if they're good or bad for our dogs, and especially if we know they're bad. There's so many good choices out there that I think it would be nice if people would just take a little bit more time, and hopefully this podcast will help do that, just to find out what foods not to feed your pet. Because as we're discussing, there can be short-term effects, terrible long-term effects. It's just not necessary. It's totally avoidable.
Absolutely. And there's lots of great things that we can give our dogs and make them happy. We just have to make sure that we're doing it in an educated fashion.
Excellent, as always. So before we let Dr. Lee go, I just wanted to mention to our listeners, via Dr. Lee actually, that the ASPCA at aspca.org, link will go in the show notes, they have a great list of foods to avoid, of toxic foods to pets. So if people are in doubt, we just touched on a few things today, some of the major ones, but just a few. If people would really like to get their hands on a more complete list, definitely visit aspca.org, and we'll put the link in the show notes as well. One thing that I also like to mention is that people should have they should have their vet obviously on hand, but they should also have the number of an emergency vet. Sometimes if the toxicity is very extreme, you know, it can be a weekend or a holiday, let's say, and people may need to have the number of an emergency vet. And if it's something that's open 24 hours or a vet hospital, and if they have that number on hand and they get their pets in quickly, you know, chances generally improve. So would you agree with that, Dr. Lee?
It sounds like great advice.
Yeah, it's common sense. So thanks so much for doing this podcast with us, Dr. Lee, again on this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Thanks so much for your input. And I'm going to think up another good topic for our next podcast. So thanks as always, Dr. Lee.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so I'd like to thank Dr. Lee as always for doing that interview and sharing his great information with us. Dr. Lee, as most of you may know by now, is a veterinarian working out of Mesa and Phoenix, Arizona. He's a really tender, compassionate vet. So if you're looking for a vet or you need a second opinion, I highly recommend Dr. Lee, and his contact information is going to be in the show notes. But just in case you don't get a chance to check out the show notes, his website is aachospitals.com. If you'd like to comment on this podcast or any other podcast, or leave suggestions and or notes or criticisms, you can do so via the blog www.pets.ca/blog. You can do so by emailing us at pets.ca@gmail.com, or you can also make your way to the forums on pets.ca and leave comments in the podcasting forum over there. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. We have a couple of really interesting interviews lined up pretty shortly, actually. And I'm just going to leave you with that teaser. So in the meantime, give your pets a really sweet, long hug. And as always, please give them an extra scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.